no one in whom she could confide her enthusiasm as the bus turned a bend in the road and Wellington's Towers came into view. "Molly, Molly!" cried a voice from somewhere in the upper regions of Queens, and down three flights of stairs rushed a wild figure, her fluffy light brown hair standing out all over her head, and her voluminous kimono sailing behind her like the tail of a kite. "Oh, Judy, it's good to see you again," cried Molly, and the two girls were instantly folded in each other's arms in a long, loving embrace. "You remind me strongly of Meg Merrilies," continued Molly, holding her friend off at arm's length and giving her a joyful little shake. "You look as if you had been running over the moors in the wind." "You'd think I was a bit daffy if you could see my room," replied Julia Keene, who, those of you who have met her in an earlier story will recall, was nicknamed Judy by her friends. "I'm unpacking. It looks like the world in the era of chaos. Mountains of clothes and islands of shoes and archipelagos of hats all jumbled into a hopeless mass. But never mind that now. Let's talk about each other. Come on upstairs. Your room's ready. I looked in half an hour ago. You've got new wallpaper and a fresh coat of paint. That's because you are one of Mrs. Markham's little pets."
"Really?" cried Molly, delighted. "How charmed Nance will be. And I've brought some white dimity curtains with ruffled edges to hang at the windows. I made them last summer when it was 98 in the shade. Where is Nance, by the way? And where are all the Queen's girls, and what new ones are here?"
"One at a time, Miss Brown," laughed Judy, following Molly up to the third story and into the large room shared by Molly and her friend Nance Oldham. "How sweet it's going to look," cried Molly, clasping her hands and gazing around her with all the ardor of a returned wanderer. "But where is Nance?" Judy's face became very grave. "Is it possible you haven't heard the news about Nance?" she said.
"Judy, what do you mean?" cried Molly, taking off her hat and running her fingers through her rumpled auburn hair,
a trick she had when she was excited and overwrought. "Now, tell me at once what has happened to Nance. How could you have kept it from me?"
"Dear old Nance!"
Judy blew her nose violently.
"Why don't you answer me, Judy? Isn't Nance coming back? I haven't heard from her for weeks." "Oh, do tell me!"
"I'm going to tell you in a minute," answered Judy. "I can't blow my nose and talk at the same time. It's a physical impossibility. I've got a wretched cold, you see. I'm afraid it's going into influenza."
"Julia Keene, you are keeping something from me. I don't care a rap about your nose. Isn't Nance coming back?"
Molly almost fell on her knees in the excess of her anxiety. Judy turned her face away from those appealing blue eyes and coughed a forced throaty cough.
"Suppose I should say she wasn't coming back, Molly. Would you mind it?"
"Would I mind it?" repeated Molly, her eyes filling with tears. Suddenly the closet door was flung open and out rushed Nance. "Oh, Molly, forgive me," she cried, throwing her arms around her roommate's neck. "Judy thought it would be a good practical joke, but I couldn't stand the deception any longer. It was worth it, though, if only to know you would miss me."
"Miss you?" exclaimed Molly. "I should think I would. Judy, you wretch!"
"I never did say she wasn't coming," replied Judy. "I simply said, is it possible you haven't heard the news about Nance?" "It shows how your heart rules your head, Molly. You shouldn't take on so until you get at the real truth. Your impetuous nature needs..." Here Judy was interrupted by the noise of a headlong rush down the hall. Then the door was burst open, and three girls blew into the room, all laughing and talking at once.
"My goodness, it sounds like a stampede of wild cattle," exclaimed Judy. "How are you, old pals?"
A general all-round embrace followed. It was Margaret Wakefield, last year's class president, her chum Jessie Lynch, and Sally Marks, now a senior, but not in the least set up by her exalted state. "Where's Mabel Hinton?" someone demanded. "She's moved over to the quadrangle into a singleton. She wanted to be nearer the scene of action," she said, "and Queen's was too diverting for her serious life's work," so Margaret explained.
"I'm sorry," said Molly. "I'm one of those nice, comfortable homebodies that likes the family to keep right on just the same forever. But I suppose we can't expect everybody to be as fond of this old brown house as we are. Sit down, everybody," she added hospitably. "And, oh yes, wait a moment. I didn't open this on the train at all."
She fell on her knees and opened her suitcase while her friends exchanged knowing smiles.